So I'm going to review a book by Thomas Nagel called What Does It All Mean? I think this is the problem with philosophy, is that almost 90% of these questions should already have an answer, and we should be beyond asking these questions. So the first question is, how do we know anything? Well, simply put, the way we know something is because two people find it independently of one another, be it structures of form or science or whatever. There's patterns that exist in cultures. There's patterns that exist in science. There's patterns that exist in human behavior that people, without knowing one another, they find it and they tell it and they describe it. And this is how the Bible describes it, is that on two or three witnesses, my law shall be established. So it's all about witness and people seeing basically the truth and it being verified by someone else. Other minds, I mean, there's other minds. I mean, obviously, you don't get what you want in life. You don't get the will into existence, whatever you want. There's obstacles. This is the main part of literature. There's obstacles that are other people. There's reality, too. Like, it's not just other minds, but this will get to, like, other parts of this thing. But there's reality, too, that just there's social milieus. There's a whole lot of things out there that just create obstacles and also create strings of good fortune. So obviously there are other minds and there's obviously objective patterns in the universe that can be described by multiple people. And this is again how we know this is how we have knowledge, is that other minds witness and record the same things. The mind-body problem really isn't a problem. The mind and the body are just, why even consider this? It's just so that way I can be whatever I want. I guess this is like something that transgenders ask, whatever. It's a stupid problem in philosophy. I don't think it's something we should be thinking about. It comes from the philosophies of monism and dualism. It really doesn't matter one iota what the mind or body is. If they're one, if they're two, the fact of the matter is we have a mind, we have a body. And in some sense, the body is part of the mind. In some sense, the mind has its power over the body. It's not an important question. The meaning of words, if there were no meaning to words, why even make this? Right? If we didn't know what the meaning of words were, why would anybody even speak? Free will? I think free will is a pretty... This is probably one of the few questions on here that are difficult, but again, it has an answer. It's about 6 to 1, half a dozen the other. It's there's both deterministic and volitive aspects of life. You both have volition, but you also have deterministic things. It's not, there's only one or the other. You can actually have a completely deterministic system that has free will in it. That's something people don't realize. Like, you can have complete determinism, but also free will. I mean, like, how does that work? Well, it just does. I can know you're going to disagree with that, but it doesn't mean that it's something you can't agree with. There's a lot of people are going to be disagreeing with that, oh, you can only have one or the other. No. Fact of the matter is, having knowledge that's guaranteed to happen does not mean that there's no free will. So the two things are kind of like humans are kind of like a narcissistic creature. We think, therefore, we know it can only exist because we know it. This is like a question that I get in a lot of problems. Probably the problem with most of these questions is this issue right here, is like, it only exists because I know it. But obviously, there's a lot of things substantiated outside of you. There's, for instance, an entire dictionary with probably, if you have a typical dictionary, there'll probably be about 40,000 words you don't even know. If you have like the standard English dictionary of like all the words possible, there's millions of words you don't know. And that alone is just substantiated on the fact that they exist. And there is things outside of us, and again, free will and determinism just happen to coincide and they can both exist at the same time. Right and wrong, I think there's pretty certain standards that moral objectivity is real. I think people tend to not want to believe that because it's convenient, but if you really look at it, it's pretty obvious what morality is. You don't have to really strain yourself too much to figure it out. Right and wrong are pretty obvious. It's just that we have political reasons to do the wrong thing, so therefore we try to justify ourselves. And that's another problem of humanity, is that most of these questions are not questions of do we have an answer to them, but it's politically expedient to not have an answer to these questions. That's why they're asked. Justice, again, justice isn't perfect. It's not going to be, and that's one of the reasons why we have to appeal to a higher power, is because, simply put, this earth is just not a good place, and it's because of these questions. Actually, we ask these questions and they have simple answers that we should be far beyond these questions if we want to get anywhere. But since we're not, this is what leads to injustice. This is why there is injustice, because we don't have these simple questions answered. And maybe that's the reason why there's a lot of problems in the world, is that we, for instance, don't know right or wrong, or we have to struggle over the idea of free will. We have idiotic philosophies like the mind-body problem. This is probably the whole reason why there is injustice and why there is such a hard life for many people, is because we just simply, we should have these answers, but we don't. Death, that's probably the single question on here that's the most fundamental and the most important. I think this is a question that a lot of philosophers and literary people have like ruminated on, like, what is death? What comes after it? I think that's a legitimate question. I think death is probably one of the most mysterious things in life, but certainly an afterlife seems to give purpose, and everything leading up to this, it's like, why is there death? And it's like, because the world is obviously flawed, and it's like, you have a lot of questions, but that's a very, very deep topic, and it's probably the only question on here that's really worthy of a philosopher. And then the meaning of life is to love God and love your neighbor. The reason why you have to love God is because if you don't love God, you don't have answers to these questions, and therefore you go through life trying to question, well, what is the meaning of life? Well, the meaning of life is pretty simple. It's love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And I'm going to now get into questions that I don't have the answers. There's actually a lot of them. For one thing, why don't people understand knowledge? Like, my questions are more meta questions of why don't people understand these things? It's always been my biggest question, seeing the great cruelty of the human race, is why do we have these very bad answers for such important questions? And this is why I'm a Christian, because it seems to me that Jesus answered them in such a way that it made more sense than anybody else in history. Like, for instance, let's just go through some of the great sages. I don't think Buddha is right, because I don't think life is just this awful thing. I think it's not based around suffering. I think suffering is a component of life, but there's good values to life. There is good. I mean, anybody who's ever felt peace or love or joy knows there's good in this world, and they're not just these chemical things. And like, even having these things is based around being a whole person. And that's just the fact of the matter, is like, you want to create a pathway to people having good feelings and good interactions with one another. And if you follow the ethics of Jesus, they seem to be perfect for creating that. And you look at his life, the way he interacted with people, he was very much about having love and fellowship and being a community. And I think that's Jesus' superiority to even Buddha, is that Buddha was pretty solitary and self-centered. He was basically a philosopher, but he didn't have good answers to the questions. Confucius probably had the best answers. Him and Mozi had the best answers. I think out of all the philosophers I've ever read, Confucius, Mozi, and Lao Tzu are probably the three that have the strongest empirical basis for ethics, and probably the were on the right track. And of course, it's funny because Mozi's and Confucius used to fight, and it's like, that's kind of the problem, I think, is that, like, again, people find a truth and then they link it with these bad things, and then other people find another truth and they link it with these bad things, and it seems like, I was just talking about this, it seems like they latch onto the bad thing rather than the good thing. It's like, this bad thing is like all they center their belief around, is like championing this bad thing. Like the Republicans, it's like greed, and the Democrats, it's like licentiousness. It's like these two things are like what the whole basis of their ethics are around. It's like neither one of those are good basis for ethics. But you look at the core things that Republicans get right, it's family values, it's conservative sacredness. The liberals, they get charity, they get compassion right. And really, if you took family values and sacredness and combine it with compassion and charity and also conservative values regarding sex, you'd have probably Jesus's philosophy. And then you have the people like Plato and Socrates and Aristotle. Socrates had a very bad definition of love until the very end, when he like gets off track and he starts this beautiful description of it. It's kind of funny because like the whole dialogue like builds up to this thing, and like the first good 5/6 of the dialogue have like, it's just completely off the track. And then like the last 6th part of the dialogue, it's like perfectly explains what love is. I find that one of the most odd things in history, that Socrates is like completely wrong. And as soon as like he lets go of Diotima, and as soon as he's like describing his ladder of love, which is like ascending the ladder to the appreciation of the moment, appreciation of the good, that's really, it's really interesting, because like that's love, but then everything else wasn't. which I find really interesting. Aristotle, he had good ethics. He was a very wise philosopher, very rooted in, like, reality, which is, I think, where I get a lot of my ideas is not really from, like, thinking, but just from, like, looking at things and kind of poking on them and tearing them apart and putting them back together and seeing what creates happiness. And Aristotle is a pretty smart philosopher. And then you have Plato, who's, like, one of the smartest philosophers to have found the form. And forms are an incredibly important concept because they're real. There's a way communication happens, and I think we've made it very mysterious, but, like, there's generally a way that we know things. It can be pretty safely assumed that that's the truth, and I think you can, like, say it's not, but you're really being dishonest, because I think, like, perhaps for the reason why we disagree with basic fundamental answers is because it's politically expedient. But there is a way communication happens, and there's a way that art and literature, and although he didn't like art and literature, but I think this is, like, fulfilling his, like, form. There is a way that, like, communication happens where it communicates truth on subtextual levels that it just is. The hardest thing people to grasp, I think, is that a lot of our most basic truths, they're not something you can arrive through syllogisms or complex chains of logic. They're simply rooted in the fact that they just exist. They just are. And it's hard for people to understand that because they call it metaphysics. They call it transcendentalism. It's really not. It's just a very difficult thing for a very large portion of people to find, and people who can seem almost like mystical in a way that they can describe things that other people like are like, whoa, what is, that's not true. It's like, well, it is. And I think that's what makes Christ so superior, is that he was invariably more intelligent than any other sage in history, and he had no chaff, he had all wheat. And his ideas, this is why Jesus is our rabbi, his ideas were far superior, and they didn't seem to lack anything, and they didn't seem to add anything. And you read the whole Bible and you understand it in context of the Pauline epistles, what the Old Testament is. It just seems like the Bible has a coherent philosophy. The Old Testament is punishment. The New Testament is forgiveness. Jesus in the sandwich in the middle is like the perfect ethics that we ought to follow. And the Old Testament is what you get for not following it. And the New Testament, Pauline epistles forward, or how you're saved because obviously you didn't.